dark strands of hair there. They probably belonged to Carlos. But I could be looking at the remains of the gunnery crew. It was hard to say. "What are your orders, sir?" I asked, returning my eyes to front and center. Turov circled around me one more time.
"I have to think," she said at last. "And it is difficult to think clearly with you standing here in front of me. You distract me, McGill. You always have."
I wasn't sure how to take that, and I opened my mouth to make a polite reply. But then she took radical action. There was a sudden movement followed by a loud snapping sound. I was never sure afterward if the last sound I heard had been my spine breaking or the clacking together of the pinchers as they closed shut after passing through my neck and striking one another. The results were the same either way. I collapsed onto the deck in two pieces and died. How many times have I died in the service of Legion Varus and mankind in general? I don't know. I think I've lost count. Or maybe I don't want to remember. Just thinking about it makes me feel a little sick. This time around, I became aware again, beginning with a sharp pain. The pain was in my ribs, on my right side. The pain repeated itself. When you first regain consciousness after death, it's like waking from a dream. Your mind isn't all there instantly. So it was today, as what my senses were telling me couldn't be happening. Someone was stomping on my chest, crashing their foot down onto my ribs like they were trying to kill a rat. My hearing came into tune next. There was someone else there, a female. She was talking, egging on the rat stomper.
"Do it, Carlos. Put him back into the wood chipper thing."
Kiwi. That voice had to be Kiwi's. I'd recognize her accent anywhere. "Kiwi," I called weakly. I put my hands up to stop the stomping, but it shifted toward my face.
"I'm going to do his throat," Carlos said. "I'm going to. He deserves it. Let the next version of him apologize." "If you kill him fast enough," said Kiwi, her voice dripping venom, "he'll never remember any of this."
My strength was returning. Following an instinct, I shifted my hands up to cover my throat. If they crushed my larynx, well, it would be all over. I'd suffocate. I had just enough in me to grab that bare foot and twist it when it came down the next time. Carlos cursed and crashed to the deck. I followed up my foot twist with a kick. It landed, but wasn't enough to put him out. He crawled away. Struggling to one elbow and wiping goo from my eyes, I took a quick, wild look around. Kiwi was crouching over me. She had a blade in her hand, a scalpel. My eyes flicked around the room. There was one more body here besides Carlos. It had to be Anne Grant. That made me angry. I reached for Kiwi's wrist and got a long cut drawn down my arm as a reward.
"What's wrong with you?"
I demanded, sitting up. She took a combat stance. I waited for her next attack. I thought I could defend myself from the ground if I had to, but if she attacked when I stood up and was off balance, well, that glittering blade would be rammed into my guts. Carlos climbed back to his feet. I realized we were all three naked. We'd been revived and left without clothing or gear. I quickly began to figure out the sequence of events, even though it was difficult to get my brand new brain functioning. "Let me guess," I said. "They revived us and strapped us down as we came out. One of you broke free and killed Anne. Are you too proud of that?"
"I am,"
said Kiwi, with more than the usual level of snarl in her tone. She'd always had a short fuse and an emotional take on life. She could be your best friend and your worst enemy, maybe both at the same time.
"What did Anne ever do to you?" I demanded. "She brought me back to life to stand trial, that's what."
I squinted at her, then looked at Carlos.
"Trial? That's it, buddy. We're all dead. We're all as good as permed thanks to your insanely stupid plan. I want you to think about that before we kill you right now for revenge. I want you to own it."
I got up slowly, and Kiwi lunged. She knew she didn't want me on my feet. Fortunately, I'd expected her to do that. I rolled back and threw a big size 13 foot into her face, stopping her dead in her tracks. Another cut appeared along my calf, but Keevy was down and the scalpel clattered on the deck. Carlos dove for it, and I landed on top of him. I put a knee into his kidney and pinned him, resting the blade free. Keevy was up and circling, eyes wild, looking for another weapon. I kept Carlos pinned. My blood ran down from my arm and my leg splattering all over his back. "I should kill both of you clowns right here, right now," I said, my sides heaving.
"Do it," Carlos said from the floor. "It won't make any difference. We're all screwed."
"Then maybe we should be figuring out a way out of our situation rather than fighting amongst ourselves. Turov is probably recording this and sipping a martini right now. Maybe this was her plan all along. Let's keep going. Wouldn't want to disappoint." Keevy frowned and looked around at the walls, which might very well have cameras. They were everywhere these days, and the low-res models were no bigger than a needle.
"Let him up," Keevy said, gesturing toward Carlos.
"You promise not to try killing me?" I asked Carlos.
"Sure," he said. "Why not? If you can get us out of this, McGill, I'll clean your kit for a year. And Keevy? Well, she'll warm your bed for a year, no charge, won't you, girl?"
She kicked him, and I didn't interfere. He deserved it. He always did. I got up off Carlos's back, and he struggled to his feet.
"You're bleeding bad," Keevy said to me.
"Now you care?" I asked incredulously. I found a skin printer and ran the wand over my injuries.
"Do you really have a plan?"
Keevy asked. Her eyes were desperate. So odd, I thought. She'd been hell-bent on cutting me a minute ago. I took a second to reflect on just how dying all the time could twist a person's mind. We were effectively immortal. But that only made us fear the process of death more because we knew what it was really like. At the same time, we'd become callous about the lives of others, and terrified of getting ourselves permed. Now that permadeath was a very real possibility, even a probability, all semblance of civilized behavior had been stripped away. "People," I said, "we have to pull it together. Where's Natasha? Did they catch her, too?" Keevy slapped me.
"Always thinking about your women. All of them except for me, that is. I wasn't even involved in your scheme, and Turov didn't believe me. She came into my room and murdered me. She clipped off my arms and legs first. My head was the last to go."
I thought I saw a single tear welling up in her left eye. That was unusual and significant. Turov must have made it traumatic if Keevy was even close to crying.
"Forget all that," I said. "Forget about Turov. I'm asking about Natasha, because she's the only one that can help us."
"Then we're screwed, big guy," Carlos said. "She was arrested, too. I don't know what they charged her with, but I can guess."
The revival machine burbled then. We all looked at it. Keevy's lip curled.
"Who do you think?"
she asked. We approached the machine, and I worked open the jaws. There were feet in there, female feet. I pulled Natasha out and revived her as gently as I could.
"Good," said Keevy. "She deserves to join us. I'm the only one who shouldn't be here."
"Keevy,"
I said, nursing Natasha, who was groggy and feeble.
"I'll tell Turov that. I'm not sure she'll believe me, but I'll tell her at the trial."
"There's going to be a trial?"
Natasha asked weakly. I felt a wave of regret. Sure, I'd blown away the squid ship and saved the Tau and their station, but my friends and I had paid a grim price, and it was about to get worse. When the hatch finally rattled, I stood close to the door. Carlos moved like a spider, poising himself behind the door, but I waved him away. That wasn't going to work. Sure enough, three heavies in full armor strode in. They plucked Carlos out of his hiding place like he was a bug on the wall. They gave us clothes, at least, but no weapons. We had nothing but thin cloth. We were marched down a long passageway. I hadn't remembered the passage being this long before. As we passed a viewport, I glanced outside. Tech World was gone. Instead, stars glided by. I knew the image was projected, not actual. We were in warp, and the viewport was only reporting to our eyes what we would have seen if mere vision could have penetrated the Alcubierre warp bubble, which it couldn't. When we got to the command module, Kiwi, Natasha, and Carlos were left manacled in the waiting area. At least they had comfortable seats. I was ushered into the next room. As the ringleader, I guessed I was going to stand trial first. Chapter 42. Imperator Turov gave me a little smile as I entered her office. I could tell she was looking forward to the trial. I reflected that maybe she was happy about the situation. After all, she'd been trying to get me permed legitimately almost since we'd first met. What a cold witch she was. We'd had two bouts of passion recently, but none of that seemed to be impinging on her now. Tribune Drusus was there, but he didn't look at me. Tribune Armel arrived a moment later. He had a drink in his hand, and somehow I knew it wasn't iced tea. "Here he is," Armel said with an odd smile. "The famous James McGill, the man who embodies Legion Varus with his roguish charm."
"Shut up, Armel," Turov said in a mild tone of voice. "This is a trial. I demand decorum."
"Right you are, sir," he said, finding a chair and sinking into it. He took a long, slurping drink from his glass and eyed everyone expectantly.
"Let us begin,"
Turov said seriously. She took a seat as well. For my part, I stood at attention facing the three of them. I stared over their heads, studying the wall. My face was expressionless as I could make it.
"Specialist James McGill," Turov said slowly. "Where did we go wrong with you?"
I wasn't sure if I was expected to answer, but I did anyway. If a man can't talk when he's on trial for his life, well, there's no justice in the universe. "Legion Varus wanted me, sir," I said. "They saw my psych profiles. It's all there. No one should be surprised." Drusus leaned forward.
"It's one thing to see a number on a chart, McGill, and another to have one of your enlisted men mutiny and start an interstellar war."
As nothing had been asked, I made no reply. Armel shook his head suddenly and gave a bray of laughter. He was mildly drunk, I could see that now. He rattled his glass and the ice cubes chased one another around in a swirling circle.
"You should give this man a medal," he said exuberantly. "He's right. He's the poster child for your entire outfit, Drusus."
"Give it a rest, Armel," Drusus retorted. "If it wasn't for Varus, you'd have been out of a job by now. Earth would be toast. You know that."
"Ha! Fantasies! Hegemony gives you shit work and tells you how important you are. Haven't you ever considered the idea that anyone could do these critical missions? That they're left to your misfits precisely because no one else wants to experience whatever meat grinder planet you'll be assigned to next?"
Drusus's face darkened and he began to stand, but Turov waved him back down. She'd been smugly watching the interchange up until this point, but now she seemed to have grown tired of the show.
"That's enough," she said. "We've talked for nearly 2 hours, gentlemen. The time has come to make a decision. What is to be done with the defendant? You've had plenty of time to come to a conclusion. How do you vote?"
This statement caught me by surprise. I flicked my eyes downward and scanned each face. Drusus and Armel were looking at each other. Drusus was angry, while Armel was amused. Turov, for her part, was staring right at me. That look, it made me uncomfortable. Tribune Armel was all smiles.
"Guilty,"
he said, leaning forward and swilling down the last of his drink.
"Perm him! You really should have done it ages ago, my fellow officers. I can't comprehend why you didn't take appropriate action after previous abuses."
Now is a fresh opportunity to correct your past errors.
Armel's vote wasn't really a surprise to me. My eyes slid to meet those of Drusus. He was my best hope. Tribune Drusus heaved a sigh.
I've been hoping for years it wouldn't come down to something like this, he said. But I'm afraid I have to agree with my colleague this time. James, you've gone too far. We can't allow people to take policy into their own hands. Surely you can see that.
I didn't know what to say. I liked Drusus, and I could see that his decision pained him. Maybe he liked me just a little as well.
I put you in a bad spot, sir, I said. I know that. But I believed then, as I believe now, that we're going to have to fight the squids sooner or later.
They're bullies, sir. To show weakness to their kind will only invite further attacks. Regardless of how you people judge me, history will tell the truth.
A philosopher, shouted Armel suddenly. A prognosticator, a seer of the future. Drusus, you really shouldn't have hidden this gem for so long. So good of you to share him with us at last.
Drusus cast Armel a venomous glance. I found Armel's behavior annoying, but also baffling. The Tribune wasn't acting his age. He had to know that the situation was a serious one. Maybe getting loaded, taunting Drusus, and perming me was his way of coping with the magnitude of what was occurring in this star system. All eyes now fell upon the Imperator. As the commanding officer in the system, she could veto the execution, or go along with the verdict and order me permed.
Gentlemen, she said, standing up, please leave me with the accused for a moment, will you?
This caused a general look of surprise from the tribunes.
Imperator, Drusus asked, are you sure that's a good idea? The accused has been known to turn violent under similar circumstances.
Turov touched her sidearm confidently.
I think I will be fine. Do you really think he could kill me?
Frankly, yes, Drusus said. Turov frowned.
Get out.
They hesitated, but only for a second. On his way past me to the door, Armel gave me a wink and a suggestive twitch of the lips, as if he suspected I might well be kissing Turov in his absence. I wanted to punch him, or at least flip him off, but I did neither. I was in enough trouble as it was. And besides, I had to admit that if romance was what Turov had in mind, she was going to have her way with me today. When the two of us were alone, the Imperator immediately came to the point. She opened her top desk drawer and lifted the galactic key in her hand. The iridescent, shell-shaped object was placed on her desk, where the screen glowed around it. Usually, desk computers would helpfully identify and connect with any technological gizmo you put on them. But not this time. The desk glowed, but only a question mark and a bubble appeared beside it.
What is this, James?
I eyed the invaluable object. My expression indicated vague interest on my part. That is a trick cigarette lighter, sir, I said. It's difficult to operate with a human hand, but if you give it to me, I'll show you how. She blew air through her lips and rolled her eyes.
I will do no such thing. You will explain this artifact and how it functions. I want to know what role it played in your scheme.
For the first time since my current body had been born, my lips curved up into a smile. It wasn't a broad grin, but it was definitely a smile. What's it worth to you, sir? As a condemned man...
You aren't condemned yet. But as your every word is annoying me further, you're getting closer to that goal.
We stared at one another for several seconds at an impasse.
Fine,
she snapped, reaching out with a finger toward her desktop.
I will summon Natasha Elkin. She will be slaughtered here on my carpet. I will then revive her and ask her about the artifact again. If she doesn't answer to my satisfaction, I'll repeat the process until we make planet fall over Earth.
I frowned. Why don't you try that with me, sir?
Because I don't think it would work. At least not as quickly as it will with Specialist Elkin.
I sighed. All right, I said. But you have to leave the others out of this. They weren't responsible, I was. Hell, Keevy didn't even know what we were up to.
Really?
She said thoughtfully.
Then I made a miscalculation in her case. I didn't think you could pull off something so elaborate without the help of all your comrades.
It wasn't all that elaborate.
Yes, it was. You essentially took command of our weapon systems and managed to hit a target of your choosing. Not only did you hit it, you destroyed it.
I'm a weaponeer, sir. Legion Varus has trained me well. She nudged the key on her desktop.
What does it do?
Are you voting to perm me or not?
That depends entirely on your answer.
Chewing that over for a few seconds, I pondered my options. There weren't many. I could try to jump her, but she was on the far side of a big desk. All she had to do was pull out her sidearm and fire a single shot. Even a representative of Hegemony Brass could be capable of doing that much. First, I want some assurances, I said. I want my friends let off the hook, not just me.
Fine. If this item is worth anything.
It is. Don't worry.
So what is it, damn you? How did you pull off all these tricks?
No trickery was involved, I said. The magic was all technological. This item is what's known as a galactic key. I went on for a few minutes to explain the key's purpose and operation. As I spoke, Turov's eyes widened.
I don't believe it,
she said, picking up the object and turning it slowly in her hands.
This explains so much. I must admit I'm in your debt for having brought it to me.
I frowned. It's mine, sir.
No, it isn't. This item belongs to me now. You will also maintain full secrecy as to the nature of it, even its existence. In return, I'll stay your sentence and pardon your friends. Further, as your entire scheme was my idea originally, I'll promote you to candidacy for veteran as a reward for having executed my plans flawlessly.
My eyes squinted into two narrow lines. What? Your idea, sir?
That's right. You followed my orders. You succeeded in a clandestine mission. You aren't authorized to talk about it further with any other persons. Are these conditions clear?
My face twisted up in disgust, but I quickly saw the advantages of her offer. I accept your terms, sir, I said, and I hope you're happy with the way I executed your brilliant plan. Turov was barely listening to me. She had the shell-like key in her hands, and she was turning it this way and that, gazing at it from every angle as if it were made of the purest diamond.
Yes, she said. I'm happy with you, James. Very happy indeed.
Chapter 43. Graves chuckled.
You lucked out, McGill. Do you have any idea what kind of spot you put the Imperator in? She had to say it was her idea. How would this have looked back at Hegemony otherwise? What if they heard that some specialist managed to start a war while she was in command? What do you think the brass would have to say about that?
Nothing good, I'm sure, sir.
That's right. Her new pretty ass would be in a sling, and her recent promotion would be history. This way she can make it look like the squids attacked the station, and she decided to fire on them. A reasonable course of action a commander might have been forced to take, but not our Turov. She doesn't like to get into something she doesn't know how to win.
I thought about it, and I had to agree with Graves. At first I thought maybe she was sweet on me, but I'd since rejected that possibility. She hadn't vetoed my execution for my sake. She'd done it to save her own skin. I couldn't help but compare her behavior now with the way she'd acted when she'd first been reborn. When I'd first helped her out of the revival, she'd been all young and smooth-skinned to start with. But Natasha had been right. Within a few days, the Imperata had returned to her old ways. She was still young-looking on the outside, but in her heart there lurked the scheming rank climber she'd become later in life.
"There's another thing," Graves said. "She wanted the video of her blaming you for everything at that trial. She's keeping that vid just in case."
"In case of what, sir?" I heard myself asking.
"Insurance. If the Narbs eventually show up and want to know what the hell happened out here, she'll show them the vid file. You'll have the starring role. The renegade McGill was caught and executed. Case closed."
I nodded. "And since we all look pretty much the same to them, we should get away with it. I mean, they wouldn't have to actually execute me. The Narbs wouldn't know the difference."
"Yeah, sure," Graves said with amusement. "You'll be fine when that day comes."
I frowned as I didn't think he was being sincere. Great. Now I knew of another way for me to die in the future. Graves cleared his throat and rattled a computer scroll. He smoothed it out flat and put his sidearm on an edge to hold it down.
"These new computer scrolls the Tau sold us are thinner, but they won't lie flat," he complained.
"I wonder if they're knockoffs," I said. "I suspect a lot of their goods are illegal copies." He looked at me sharply, then shook his head.
"Forget you ever had that thought, Specialist."
"Consider it forgotten, sir."
"Good."
"Ah,"
said Graves, suddenly shaking his computer scroll flat again. "I see one more thing."
Working his tapper, he summoned Veteran Harris.
"What now, Centurion?" I asked.
Graves waved for me to be quiet. I felt uncomfortable as Veteran Harris responded to the call and entered the room. Harris looked me over with disdain, while I avoided his gaze.
"Is this man bothering you, sir?"
Harris demanded.
"I'm not a schoolgirl in a city park," Graves laughed. "But yes, McGill always bothers me."
"I feel the same way," Harris said.
"Then I'm going to make you happy. Veteran Harris, I hold here a warrant for McGill's arrest, signed by Tribune Armel himself."
Harris's eyes lit up. What a bastard, I thought.
"What are the charges, sir?"
Harris asked eagerly.
"Sedition. Acts unbecoming. Assaulting superiors from another legion. There's quite a list here."
"I knew it,"
Harris said, staring at me like a dog watching a hamburger.
"I knew you'd blow it. Germanica doesn't put up with your kind of crap. They're fancy boys, every last one of them. But they play it by the rules. You have to give them that."
"That might be the first and only time I've ever heard you praise Germanica,"
Graves remarked.
"A man has to give credit where credit is due."
"Well said. Veteran Harris, place Specialist James McGill under arrest."
Warily, Harris approached me and snatched away my sidearm. I thought about fighting with him, I really did. But something told me I had a better way to play my cards. If I went to the Imperator, maybe she could get me out of this. After all, we had a deal. Harris was grinning at me like a kid on Christmas morning.
"All right," Graves said, heaving a weary sigh. "Specialist McGill has now been placed under arrest."
He lifted his tapper and began recording. He took vid of me standing there with Harris at my side pointing a gun at me.
"I'm performing an inquiry," Graves said. "McGill, did you cause the death of Germanica troops during our short stay on Tech World?"
Probably, sir."
"I'll take that as a confession. Did you disobey the direct orders of higher-ranked Germanica legionnaires?"
"Sir, I worked with those people. I saved their sorry butts. If it wasn't for me, they'd all be permed."
Graves waved away my words as if they stank.
"Yes or no will do."
I sighed. "Yes, I suppose I did that."
"And lastly,
Did you collaborate with one adjunct Claver of Germanica to perform treasonous acts? Bristling, I shook my head.
That doesn't make any sense, sir. First, they claim I disobeyed the orders of one of their officers. Then they say I'm in trouble for obeying the orders of another.
Just answer the question, McGill,
Graves asked in a bored voice.
Yeah, sure, I said. I followed Claver's orders. You sent me on the mission yourself.
Graves glanced at me in irritation. He worked on his tapper, editing the recording. The absurd questioning was beginning to get to me. I began to feel a burning sensation around my neck.
I'm cutting out that last sentence, Graves said. Please keep your remarks to the point. Last question. Did you or did you not assault and personally murder Adjunct Claver?
My jaw clenched, but I managed to answer evenly.
Yes, I said. I did kill that weaseling bastard. They should be glad I did it, too. He created the entire disaster on the Megahab and caused the deaths of over 1 million civilians.
Well said, Graves muttered. All right, then. Based on the evidence of your confessions, I find you guilty. I sentence you to imprisonment without appeal for an indefinite period. The manacles, Veteran Harris.
Harris's hands shook as he handed over the manacles. I put them on after he pointed his gun into my face.
Excellent, Graves said. Hold those a little higher, will you, McGill?
I did as he asked, but I didn't know why I was cooperating any longer. This was bullshit.
Sir, I said, I've done plenty that was off-script on this mission.
Harris and Graves shared a dirty laugh over that.
You're a master of the art of understatement, Graves said.
But, sir, I don't think this punishment is just. How can you lock me up and leave me to rot? I'd rather be permed.
Harris perked up and he lifted his gun meaningfully.
Maybe we should listen to his plea, Centurion.
Graves looked at his tapper.
Hold on.
Sir,
he waved a finger to silence me, still staring at his tapper. I heaved a sigh and stood there, baffled.
1 full minute has passed,
Graves announced at last, lowering his arm.
All right. Release him, Harris.
What?
Demanded Harris.
Did you not hear me pronounce the sentence?
Graves asked calmly.
I said I'd sentenced McGill to imprisonment for an undetermined amount of time. I've decided since then that his sentence is complete, and I've released him.
1 minute?
Asked Harris, aghast. Graves motioned for Harris to get on with releasing me, and I lifted the manacles toward him helpfully. Harris grumbled curses, but he unlocked my wrists.
Thank you, veteran, I said. I'm sure I learned my lesson today.
Harris rolled his eyes. Graves dismissed him, but he had me stay behind.
Now, to our last order of business, Graves
said.
You've been promoted to candidacy for the rank of veteran by the Imperator. Are you aware of that?
I am. Graves nodded and eyed me in speculation.
I never would have thought you'd be so good at horse trading. I can only imagine what you held over her head to get this perk on top of everything else.
He grinned at me briefly while I pretended not to get his implication. Without letting on, I found I was pleased by Graves' assumptions. If people thought I'd promised to keep my mouth shut about Turov's transgressions with an enlisted man in trade for rank, well, that was better than having them know the truth. No one needed to know about the Galactic Key.
Harris isn't going to like this, Graves said. In fact, I wouldn't give you the best odds of passing the trials. But you've got the Imperator behind you. What can I do? I'll sign it.
Frowning, I nodded as if I understood. But I didn't. Not really. What I did know was that getting to the rank of veteran in Legion Varus wasn't completely straightforward. The commanders announced new candidates for the rank of veteran, but that alone didn't guarantee the promotion. Each candidate had to prove himself to the other veterans in the cohort first. The exact nature of the process was somewhat arcane
and shrouded in secrecy. What I did know was that a lot of it depended on the man's popularity with the other veterans. Unfortunately, the veteran I knew best downright hated me.
"You have the right to turn down this promotion to candidacy,"
Graves said, looking at me expectantly. For an honest second, I considered exercising my option of refusal. But then I felt the spark of anger. Harris had been so greedy to see me dead or imprisoned, and I knew there was hardly anything I could do that would piss him off more than gaining the rank of veteran. "I accept the promotion, sir," I said formally. Graves shrugged.
"Your funeral. Dismissed, specialist."
Wondering about the nature of my future, I left his office and returned to my quarters. We arrived on Earth several days later. Our mission had radically altered over the course of the campaign, and it had been decided that leaving Tech World early was the best option. Going home solved many of our problems. Both Legion Varus and Germanica had suffered crippling losses. Worse, due to the loss of all but one of our revival units, we weren't able to rebuild our strength. By going home, we could regrow every trooper within a few days. Hegemony could then decide if they wanted to send us back or utilize our skills in some other capacity. When Minotaur came out of its warp bubble and glided close to Earth, I gazed through a viewport thoughtfully. I wondered how long I would have here at home before I was shipped off to war again. For the first time, I had another thought in the back of my mind. What if the war followed me to here? What if Earth was the next battleground? The thought was disturbing because I didn't think we could beat the squids if they launched a full-out attack. Not yet. Maybe not ever. A month later, I was back at home in my shed. Things had improved around the homestead. Even though I was only a veteran candidate, my pay had increased. I'd also collected my higher active duty pay, and for once, I had a good deal of cash on my hands. Spending a few credits on extras, I bought a real environmental control unit. It was one of the new models that gently conditioned the air to whatever temperature, humidity, or even barometric pressure you wanted inside your home. It even had settable oxygen levels, and I found I liked mine just a little bit on the high side. It was an alien device, naturally, but it worked like a charm. Fall was setting in, with the cool breath of winter coming in on the wind behind it. I knew that even if it snowed, I'd always be comfortable in my place. Natasha showed up one night in November. It was cold outside, but warm and perfect in my shed. She came in when I invited her and marveled at the change.
"This is so different from the last time I visited here," she said.
"Yeah. I even cleaned all the blood stains off the walls." She gave me a wry face.
"Don't spoil it."
"Sorry." She looked down at her hands for a second, which were fidgeting with one another. Still looking down, she began to speak.
"James. James, I came to tell you I'm sorry."
This surprised me, really surprised me. Of all the stuff I was expecting this girl to throw into my face, an apology had to be dead last on a very long list. My mouth opened a tiny fraction, but I clamped it shut again. Under no circumstances was I going to screw this up. She looked at me, and I looked back at her with a blank poker face. I honestly didn't know what else to do. She looked down again, and I was off the hook.
"I've been studying these cases. Ones like yours, I mean. I've read up on them. Sexual predators come in all shapes and sizes, James. I know that now. I didn't understand before."
I wanted to say something. I wanted to choke or even laugh out loud. But I didn't, and I was proud of my self-control.
"Turov was your superior. You were taken advantage of. That's how I understand it. And I want you to accept my apology for getting angry with you about sleeping with her."
"Okay," I said. I felt I had to say something. She gave me a little kiss, then grabbed me by the chin.
"But don't go back to her. Not if you ever want to be with me again. I hate that woman. She's a monster, do you understand me?
I nodded. Yeah. Look, Natasha.
What?
What was I going to say next? That I'd been as guilty of any transgressions as Turov had? That blaming it all on the officer was bullshit in my book? I couldn't do it. Instead, I hugged her, and I poured her a glass of wine. It was perfectly chilled, due to the precision engineering of my new alien-made fridge. The old one had never recovered after taking a bullet months ago. Sitting with Natasha again, I handed her the wine, and we chatted about light things for a time. Finally, the subject of the squids came up. The topic never seemed to be far from anyone's mind these days.
"Do you think they'll come here, James?"
she asked me almost in a whisper.
"They might, you know. They know what we did."
"Are you sure? We blew their ship up in a single salvo." She shook her head.
"I'm a tech, remember? We went over all the radio signals while we were stabilizing the Megahab. They got off a packet of data with a powerful transmitter. They sent it on a tight beam toward the rim of the galaxy, somewhere out past the edge of the frontier."
I frowned. "You think it was an SOS?
What else could it have been?
Hegemony knows about that, right?" She pursed her lips at me.
"Of course.
I'm just asking because I haven't heard anything on the net."
"They're not talking about it on the online reports, naturally. There's no benefit to causing a panic."
A panic. The words rang in my mind. Natasha was right. If the people of Earth knew the real score, that unknown worlds full of cephalopods were out there and enraged with us, if they knew that Battlefleet 921 was gone and not scheduled to return, yes, they'd panic, all right.
"Did we do the right thing, James?"
Natasha asked me in a small voice. I looked down at her. I could tell she was freaking out. It was true we'd taken it upon ourselves to blast the squids. Sure, Turov was taking the credit and was now doing a talk show circuit. Her new looks were helping her there. But it had been Natasha, Carlos, and I who'd pulled the trigger on this new war.
"Absolutely,"
I said, putting my arm around her and pulling her close.
"We didn't have any choice, really.
They were bullying Earth, and we punched them in the face. They'll think twice before they come after us again." Natasha seemed happier, but I wasn't sure she bought my bullshit. Hell, I didn't even buy all of it. We sipped our wine until the bottle was empty and fell asleep together on my couch. Alien air pumps wheezed and thrummed softly. Somehow, it was a comforting sound.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Machine World, Book 4 in the Undying Mercenaries series free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Tech World, Undying Mercenaries, Book 3. Written by B.V. Larson. Performed by Mark Boyette. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2014 by B.V. Larson. Production copyright 2014 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Machine World, Book 4 in the Undying Mercenaries series.
A coward dies many times before meeting his actual death. Julius Caesar, 48 B.C. Chapter 1. Earth had gone through several dramatic changes during my years as an adult. First, we'd been thrown into an economic tailspin when Cancri 9, better known as Steel World, had canceled our most lucrative Legion contracts. Years later, we'd been given a boost in budget coming from the Empire's coffers to handle local defense. Times were good back then. Things had shifted yet again this year. After reestablishing contact with the cephalopod race at Tech World, and somehow ending up in a state of undeclared war with them,
Earth was tightening up her collective belt all over again. It wasn't that we didn't have money. The Magua, a race of galactics that was struggling with their peers for dominance among the core systems, essentially owned our backwater province, either as part of their strategy or because we were just a small line item in a vast budget. They were still sending us funding in the form of hard galactic currency. What had changed was hegemony government's state of mind. Our worldwide politicians and bureaucrats were rationing everything, spending every spare credit on our military effort. I understood the goal, but it was annoying. Gone were the days when a trooper could buy himself an alien-made contrivance for the fun of it. All the best imported stuff went straight to the legions. They'd stopped paying us in galactic credits, too, opting instead to issue hegemony credits to soldiers. What's more, the established rate of exchange was ruinous. In the past, about 1,000 hegemony credits had been deemed worth a single galactic credit, but they were now giving us less than half that after the accounting was all said and done.
"Crooked government stooges,"
Carlos complained bitterly over a beer in Legion Varus's chapter house in Atlanta.
"At least we finally got a cheap pub in our chapter house."
I nodded and sipped a sour beer. They had it on tap and they sold it cheap. That was about all I could say that was positive about this bitter, foamy piss water. I suspected the reason they'd opened a bar at one end of Atlanta's row of Legion chapter houses was a sneaky one. The bar was a trick, an inexpensive way to buy off troops like Carlos and me. Sure, we'd lost half our income in some kind of shady, computerized money shuffle, but at least we could get drunk for less to drown our sorrows. Making a face, I gulped my mug dry and slammed it down. The bartender behind the counter winced, looking at us in concern.
"You two aren't about to make trouble, are you?"
she asked.
"What?" demanded Carlos. "Do Vera's troops have that bad of a rep?"
"You're getting there. We had a serious fight last night. They had to call in the MPs. There were two deaths, and one of the revives had been placed on hold pending an inquiry."
I shook my head, snorting. "Let me guess. They're holding up the Varus guy's revive, right? What was his name?" The bartender shrugged and frowned, thinking for a moment.
"A big guy? Sargon was his name, I think."
"Hot damn," I said. "I wish I'd been there to watch his back. Poor Sargon." Carlos nudged me.
"Why don't you go charm the Imperator? I bet she'd squeeze out a revive for him if you handled her right."
Carlos was talking about Imperator Turov, who'd had a questionable relationship with me last year. I gave him a sour glance and waved for a fresh beer. The bartender poured it, but I could tell she was wary about feeding us any more alcohol.
"That business with the Imperator is all over with, Carlos," I said. "She doesn't care if I live or die now."
I lifted a fresh mug toward my face, but the beer never reached my lips. A hand interposed itself, touching my wrist to block the path of my beverage. The hand was fairly strong, but pale-skinned and thin-boned. Getting between a drinking man and his brew was rarely a good idea, but it was especially ill-advised in the case of a Legion Varus trooper. We just didn't take that kind of crap from anyone. Without even thinking about it, I rotated toward the intruder. My other hand was already balled up into a fist, and it levered back almost on its own, ready to deliver a hammer blow. Behind the bar, the bartender had already hit the floor. She was probably summoning the cops on her tapper, but I didn't much care. The only thing that stopped me from slamming my fist into the face I saw standing over me was recognition.
"Winslade?"
I could tell right off he knew he'd miscalculated by grabbing my wrist. His hand leapt off mine and he backed up a step.
"McGill,"
he said, trying to pretend I hadn't scared him.
"You know, striking an officer is a flogging offense, yes?"
"Yeah," I said slowly, as if gauging my options. Finally, I lowered my fist and purposefully turned back to my beer. I took a drink, made a bitter face, and waited for him to explain himself. Winslade was Turov's lapdog. He was a suck-up and worse. He'd abandoned Legion Varus for hegemony at the same time Turov had. That was a shameful thing in the eyes of any off-world combat legionnaire. We knew that men who couldn't handle real fighting often sought cush jobs in office buildings on safe, reliable dirt.
"You're drunk, aren't you?"
Winslay demanded.
"That's great. What else should I have expected?"
"This is a bar, sir," Carlos pointed out, "and we're off duty."
Winslay nodded.
"You were off duty? You're back on as of now, McGill."
He finally had my complete attention. "What's up, adjunct?" He was a prissy officer as they went, and I could tell he didn't like my lack of deference. I could see his annoyance and the way his lips twitched and his eyes narrowed, but I just didn't care about that right now.
"I'm here to transport you up to Hegemony Central in Northeast Sector."
"I know where it is," I said, frowning. The worldwide seat of Hegemony government had been established on a chunk of land that had long ago been known as Connecticut. I'd never thought much about why the powers that be had chosen that small plot of the planet to elevate to the status of a new capital. But I supposed it was the same reason they'd built Washington, D.C. in the first place. It was close to where the important people lived.
"Why the hell are you taking McGill to the capital?" Carlos demanded, immediately jealous. "What about me? If he did anything cool, it was only due to my private counseling."
This statement seemed to amuse Winslade. He'd gotten over his rush of fear concerning my fist, and he was back to his usual slick, self-confident attitude.
"What if I'm taking him up there to be properly permed?" Winslade asked.
"Well, then," Carlos said, "in that case I'm not responsible. In fact, McGill has been acting strange lately, like he's hiding something. Maybe you should go out to his shack in the swamp and mess with him tonight. He loves that."
Winslade nodded at Carlos dismissively and gestured to me with his fingers as if he was beckoning to a dog.
"Follow me, McGill."
"You're a hog," I pointed out rudely. "An officer, but still a hog. I need orders from my own legion."
Winslade's face remained confident and bemused.
"Have you checked your tapper lately, specialist?"
Frowning, I looked down at my arm. The mail light was blinking red. A priority message was waiting for me in my inbox. I didn't even have to read it. I knew Winslade had me. "All right," I said, accepting that I was beaten. Winslade was the kind of guy who waited until he had all the cards before making a move. There was no point in arguing with him now. It would just give him the thrill of backing me down. I slapped a 20-credit piece on the bar and stood up. "See you, Carlos. Let's go, Winslade." I followed the officer to the door.
"He's paying for mine, too," I heard Carlos tell the barkeep.
I shook my head. I'd meant to leave the girl a big tip. It was the least I could do after scaring her half to death. Exiting into the parking lot, I followed Winslade to a sleek black contraption parked out on the periphery of the Puff Creek pavement. "Is that an air car?" I asked, surprised.
"Yes, personal use. Don't tell me you've never been in one before."
"I rode in one that I liberated from a galactic once," I said, giving him a grin. His face froze in a mask that told me I'd given him more information than he wanted to hear. He opened the canopy, and I climbed over the wing and slid onto the plush, saurian-hide seats. He climbed in the other side.
"Don't talk like that," he said seriously. "About galactics, I mean. Not even if you're joking around."
"You think they're bugging the alien-made cars now?"
"Maybe,"
he said, licking his lips and powering up the air car. The strange vehicle vibrated for about 10 seconds, then launched into the sky with alarming power. We rose up into the clouds and leveled off. The only sounds were the thrumming of the engine and the muted rush of air flowing over the dual canopies.
"What do you want from me anyway?" I asked.
"Zlur wants you. He's waiting for us up at Central."
This statement, at long last, cut through my state of intoxication. Up until then, I'd been just another hard-drinking trooper in a foul mood. Now I knew things were serious. Zlur was one of the Magua. He was, for all intents and purposes, a pharaoh on Earth, a god-king who wielded the ultimate authority of the galactics within the boundaries of Frontier 921. I'd met Chief Inspector Zlor previously under unfortunate circumstances. I sincerely hoped that he didn't recognize me this time around. Chapter 2. Whenever Winslade crawled out from under his rock, I knew Imperator Turov must have ordered him to do it. Sure enough, when we got to Central, we landed on top of Hegemony headquarters and were transported via a smart elevator to her office. She started off by making a speech, which I quickly tuned out. I found myself staring at her rear while she strutted back and forth over her new plush carpet. We were near the top of what had to be one of the biggest buildings I'd ever seen in my life. Hegemony headquarters made the old Pentagon building look like a joke. It was shaped like a ziggurat and contained 1,000 stories of stacked puffcrete, reaching as high as a mountaintop. Outside Turov's slanted floor-to-ceiling office window, I could see clouds scuttling along far below us, obscuring the surrounding city streets. My eyes roved from the fantastic external view to Turov's butt, and back again. Once in a while she caught me looking, but she didn't complain. I honestly thought she might be enjoying my distraction. Sometimes she did stuff like that, wearing uniforms with smart cloth cinched up a few notches beyond tight, and marching around to show herself off. Since her last revive, she'd been restored to an unreasonable point of youth and beauty in her life. She looked like she was about 20 years old, even though she was twice that in actual age.
"James," she said, interrupting my reverie, "wake up. You must pretend you're an officer when you meet Zlur."
"You want me to impersonate an officer?" I asked. "Why is that?"
"Because I don't want to explain why a non-com was involved in an interstellar diplomatic disaster."
"Why does Zlur want to see me at all, sir?"
The Imperator made an irritated gesture.
"I don't know. It was the Nerbs that made the initial request. First, they demanded a roster of people involved. We thought maybe they were drawing up charges. Now, I'm not so sure. Zlor has taken up the matter personally, but instead of lodging formal accusations, he's demanded this interview. The four of us talked to the cephalopods in person, so we must all be present when Zlor calls upon us."
"Well, I've got a solution to this business of rank, sir. All you have to do is make me an officer. Primus sounds nice, but I'd settle for adjunct if I had to."
"Shut up. You haven't even been confirmed as a veteran yet. I find this kind of blatant rank-climbing personally disgusting, McGill."
I released an involuntary snort and looked at her in surprise. "I was just making a joke, sir."
"Well, it's not funny. Just don't volunteer any information, and we'll get through this."
I was annoyed, but I managed to shut up. Hearing how disgusting rank climbers were was ironic, especially coming from Turov. She'd clawed and scratched her way to Imperator using every dirty trick in the book. In fact, I think she'd invented a few new ones along the way. But pointing that out wasn't going to improve her mood, so I dropped the matter. Zlur arrived to speak to us shortly after that, and everyone's mood changed. At first, Imperator Turov did all the talking, or rather, I should say, schmoozing. She was a natural, I had to give her that. For all the harsh treatment she could dish out on the head of a subordinate, she was nothing but love and biscuits when it came to talking to real brass. Chief Inspector Zlur was the final authority in Frontier 921. Thousands of star systems were under his direct management. He was a Magwa, and his kind owned our local patch of stars. Physically, the Magwa were spidery aliens with a central body mass that looked like a black widow's thorax. Zlur had 6 limbs that operated as arms or legs interchangeably. Each of these limbs terminated with hands that could be used like feet or to manipulate objects. For all his power and position, I didn't think Zlur liked his job much. He complained about it constantly.
"These worlds of yours are called the Dark Worlds by the Magua,"
his translator box rasped.
"They are dreary and unpleasant. I find this fringe of cold, lonely planets depressing."